Welcome to the Faith Homestead Podcast, where we talk to you about God, family, homesteading, frugal living, and all the in-between. We're your hosts, Sarah
and Matt, and we thank you for joining us today. Please take a minute to subscribe, and we hope you stay a while.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Faith Homestead Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Matt.
And thank you for joining us today. So today we're going to talk about a couple things. The biggest being the catastrophe that occurred at our house on Sunday of last week. So if you guys could please like, share, subscribe wherever you are listening, and we welcome you. So what happened last Sunday? What were we doing and what did we hear?
So it must have been during nap time because two of the three were sleeping. We were both out front.
We were getting chicken feed out of the car.
Oh, that's right. You went to the feed mill.
Yeah.
And I heard
a noise.
A crash.
And I thought it sounded like a raccoon knocking over a trash can of recyclable is what it sounded like.
Yeah.
Recyclables falling down. And we didn't really care. We're like, whatever. And I was like, I'll go check the trash cans. And I walked over and it wasn't the trash cans. So then what?
I came inside and asked Thomas, our oldest. He heard it. And he said it was inside the house.
Uh-oh.
So we had a lot of prepped foods, all kinds of different stuff on a plastic shelving unit.
Mm-hmm. From Home Depot.
Which crashed.
All the way down to the ground. Kaputsky. I was very upset. And here's why. So the first reason I was upset is because I know better. I know that unless a shelf is made with wood and stationary, you need to be very, very mindful of how much weight you put on it. And I didn't think there was that much weight on the shelf. And to be completely honest, after assessing the situation, there wasn't too much weight on many of the shelves except for the one in the middle. The one in the middle held a lot of jars, ball jars, of dried goods, thankfully. Lots of lots of herbs that I had dried over the summer, lots of dehydrated fruits like orange slices. But one thing,
we had some greens, stuff like
some
that.
We
had the oxygen
absorbers in some dried goods that I didn't end up doing in Mylar. I just did them in jars, and so that wasn't a huge loss. But the thing that really, I'm really upset about it still, I had made a gallon of fire cider, which if you don't know what fire cider is, it is basically like a natural powerhouse for, how like when you get sick and most people take like emergency or they start loading up on vitamin C and elderberry. Well, basically fire cider has lots of elderberry in it. Lots of jalapenos and ginger and horseradish. And it's this huge, you can Google it. It's a huge concoction of basically all of the powerhouses of the natural world placed into a jar with a ton of apple cider vinegar.
It smells great.
He doesn't like the smell. I actually kind of am used to it. So I don't mind it. I actually think it's nice. And you basically let it sit in a jar for upwards of, most people start to, pull it out at 4 weeks because it's usually something that you start it in like the late summer and you use it throughout fall and winter. Well, I was making another batch and I lost it all. And not only did I lose it all, but it went everywhere because silly me put it on the top, the second to the top shelf. And I know better. I mean, this is like preparation 101. You don't put liquids on a high shelf. Because if anything were to happen, it's going to crash and smash open. The only thing that kind of saved us was I had a bunch of jars full of buttermilk powder, milk powder, butter powder, heavy whipping cream powder. Because in our house, and this is really great if you're kind of new to prepping, it's really smart to buy all of your things that you don't really use a great quantity of. So heavy whipping cream, half and half, buttermilk, all those things you can buy in liquid form already prepared at the grocery store. But how often are you going through, a quart of all those things? So I buy in powder form I get it from Amazon or any local supplier, and I put it in jars. And so those all smashed with the fire cider, acting as a soaking,
absorbing
agent. So I had most of the fire cider had spilled and cracked everywhere. All the powders came crashing down and cracked everywhere. But then they absorbed it like kitty litter in ice. Like, that's literally what happened. And so once everything was absorbed, I sat on my hands and knees and I scrubbed with steel wool and like the metal scoring sponges, and for probably 4 hours, because it was like at that point it was like this thick. If you're listening to us on the podcast, it was like 2 inches of thick of powder that was now dried. And so I was scraping it off the floor. Very, very thick, like cement. So we want to kind of give you a reminder. If you are new to prepping, or if you are even a seasoned pro at prepping, this is a reminder, a gentle reminder now, to not be like us and stack lots of weight on your plastic or even metal shelving units. We want to always remember to keep all liquids on the very bottom.
Instances where you have any glass containers, that, you know, the more you can keep them toward the lower side on those plastic shelving units, just to, if it is going to go, at least the likelihood of them falling. I mean, we had several that came down from higher up that didn't break.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how.
Yeah. The ball, I feel like the jars, the most
older ball jar seemed way stronger than the newer jars.
And most of the jars that did break were generic, like Amazon, like purchases that are not really, like, they were like the ones that you can just get for storing, like storing jars. I think I only lost like two ball jars. So it was mostly like, you know, used pickle jars that I had herbs dried in and stuff like that. So just something to think about. And, you know,
and on the bright side, we got to build a actual shelving unit.
He did. And just so you know, though, I want to point this out, is we went to Home Depot when we bought these plastic shelving units because we needed something and we wanted something quick. And the one that we had, we just looked it up. Each shelf was rated at 150 pounds for a total of 750 pound total capacity that it was said to be able to hold. And we had nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
Literally nowhere close to that. So just be really mindful that it is not the truth.
The mess looked like a 750 pound mess, though.
It did, but it wasn't. I mean, it really wasn't. So Matt, he got right to work. He knows I really was thinking about this, and I was thanking the Lord, because your love language, you knew my love language at that moment. I was in the midst of being very emotional, but kind of numb at the same time, because a ton of work. I mean, it's a lot of work. I do a lot of dehydrating of herbs and fruits, and it was a lot of work that I lost. And he went right to work and went and built me a amazing shelf, which I'm going to post a picture at the end of this video so you can see it. But you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and I think that this is typical male. When we have emergency, we try to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's not what your wife is looking for. They just want someone to listen, which I'm learning.
But your action was several years really, in marriage, but it really hit my heart.
This was one of those instances where getting right to work, measured everything out, planned a shelving unit to the space that we had in that room.
Exactly.
And started building.
It's beautiful.
Went to Home Depot. Surprisingly, building material cost was a little bit lower than I thought it was going to be. you know, the 2x4s were, I want to say, like $3.55 each, which, you know, they're a year ago, they were over $6, $7, maybe even higher. I don't really know, because I stopped doing any projects.
We used scrap work there for
was,
whatever we
could. Yeah, there was nothing that I was building wise needing to do that I was like, I have to have this done. Mm-hmm. Where this instance last weekend, you know, Saturday evening, we got everything cleaned up, had it ready, and Sunday morning was at Home Depot when they opened, ready to get it building. You know, just measured it out, knowing shelving heights. I mean, I maybe could have gotten more creative with the upper levels, maybe doing only 10 inch between the shelves instead of 12.
But it's really great.
I did 12 inches, so that jar size really didn't matter. You could double cans up if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Plenty of room for whatever. There was going to be 7 shelves, 8 foot 2x4, like let's make it work.
It's an entire wall. And I really love it because we have a pantry actually right off of this room, and the shelves that are in it, I mean, it's kind of inefficient because you can stack some cans, but there's like 2 feet, but
they're about 18 to 24 inches apart.
Yeah. And those shelves that he made me, we actually took the biggest cans we could find and the smallest cans we could find. Yeah. And we were like, how many can we like stack? And I wanted to be able to, you know, stack cans that were from the store, some emergency food cans. And it's absolutely amazing.
And we also looked at the larger gallon size jars that the water glass eggs are in. Making sure they fit on the shelf. And they slide
right in.
So, you know, because we had a lot of those things already there, like I could just set it up, measure really fast, and was able to just go and buy it, picked up all the materials. And I mean, we had it done before the Eagles game came on that day. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So he was able to still watch the sports
game. So, you know,
yeah, it only took you a few hours.
Yeah. And that was, you know, I spent time with our oldest, kind of having him try to help out. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that he helped out, but getting him involved, including him in the process.
He felt very proud of his contributions.
He knew, you know, we reached a level where he couldn't hold the wood up above his head any longer and, you know, wanted to give up. But, you know, just had him involved so that he could actually just see what went into it. It wasn't a difficult or challenging build.
And it was the cost of what Matt spent to what
it was $200 to build it.
It would have been the cost for two more shelving units.
Each one of those shelving units is like $75 to $75 to $100, something like that. So,
and not even, I mean, this thing will, I mean, it's never moving. It's really, I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful for it. And we will post a picture at the end. So that's our catastrophe. We wanted to kind of talk to you about that and kind of just remind you that you can get complacent when it comes to storing. You know, we're tired. We're just going through the motions. I put that fire cider right on that shelf that was at my eye level, and I didn't even think about it because I was like, I have to go in and shake it every couple of days, and I just didn't even think about it.
Yeah,
I didn't even think about it, and it went down. So actually, what tipped the scales was I had gone to the supermarket and I got a thing of paper towels, and I put it up on the very top shelf. And I think a couple hours later it fell over. So the paper towels must have pushed it over the edge. I don't even know. But so today we're also going to talk about garden prep because, as you know, we are in February. Happy February, guys. And it is seed starting is quickly approaching. Depending on what zone you are in, you may have already started some of your indoor seeds. I am actually going to be sending Matt out this coming weekend to start digging out our greenhouse. We have a very, very inexpensive greenhouse that we got from Aldi, which is a discount store near us. And
we also have another one that you probably forgot we bought.
You're right. You just reminded me. So actually, I think it was at Aldi too.
Yes.
Yeah, so Aldi last year had greenhouses on clearance. And I was like, you know what? I'm doing it. And I think it was like $20. And I bought another one. It's not as good as the first Aldi one I found. But we actually are linked in our storefront. If you go to Faith Homestead, you can link it through this YouTube video or on the podcast. You can see our Amazon storefront. We linked some that are very similar to what we have because we do an indoor greenhouse setup, and we get everything you need to start seeds is in the Amazon store. It's already set up for you guys. As soon as this video goes up, you'll see it. It's under like seed starting 2023. All your clamp lights, all your grow lights, all your labels, every single thing that you need to be successful to start seeds where you live this year is all in that store. But
and I feel like maybe doing a video on that process,
we're gonna
might be,
show you. We're gonna
might
show
be
you
one of these
that.
Weekly podcasts, right? Because it makes a lot of sense to walk you through how you do it. What are we doing on a daily basis, even after we get
those
seeds?
Yeah, because
there
is care.
Right?
I mean, you can't just set it up and forget it. Like, you have to actually care. There's little thermometers, you can check the humidity. Not super important, but it is kind of important to get the most yield from your seed starting. And basically, you don't even need to have it in front of a window. We have an old sliding glass door, which doesn't really get that much light because it's on the back of our house. But we set it up in our inside of our house, and we put clamp lights with the grow lights all over. It's not anything sophisticated at all. We did it the most inexpensive way we could, and we've been doing this for about 8 years. And it's what we do. We start normally at the end of February, early March, mm-hmm. and we then harden them off. So when you get into May and the weather is tolerable, that won't kill a plant, you start taking your trays out during the day and bring them back in at night, and you harden them off for a few weeks. And then by Father's Day, they are ready for the, they're ready where we live in zone seven. They're ready for the ground.
Some even earlier.
Yeah. Some even earlier. Yeah. Ground
really early.
Yeah. So that is something that we want to talk about, is just prepping for your garden. You want to talk about, we did mention this a few weeks ago, but you want to talk about just like the clearing of the garden?
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually got out there a couple of weeks back just because the weather was so warm, we could have the kids outside.
Mm-hmm.
So we take advantage of that, you know, weekend time when in the middle of winter, you get a nice warm weekend and the kids can be outside.
It's the best.
We take full advantage of that. So,
oh yeah. And especially if you're in a muddy area, and we learned this year. So our kids are, they get messy, and our young son is only a year and a half. And so we just did snowsuits, and they can roll around, you know, play tag with each other. And we bring them inside, we strip them off before they walk inside and just throw the snowsuits in the wash, because we haven't seen any snow where we live in Pennsylvania this year. So
yeah, where we are in Pennsylvania, we have not had snow.
They're
we had
mud suits.
a couple of cold days, but they definitely loved being outside, and
yeah,
though it wasn't snow, they were, you know, having just as much fun on the ground. So
yeah,
and we cleaned up the debris from last year in the garden, which I don't race to kind of clean up the garden at the end of the year.
No,
the plants that have fruit on them, the tomatoes that are never going to turn red at the end of the year, they just decided they were coming too late.
Yeah.
I leave them around and just let them kind of
do
their
thing.
Let the animals
take them, stuff like that.
Let them fall down on the ground. Let them rot there. If the animals don't take them, it's all good for the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't race to cleaning up the garden at the end of the growing season. And so this was an ideal opportunity for us to get out there and clean it up. Pulling out the tomato cages, the lattice structure we had tried setting up. We're going to do something a little bit different there this year for growing the beans, to try to get them up off the ground a little bit more. And then, you know, just kind of trimming everything off at ground level, right? So I don't pull anything out of the ground.
When
we have all these dead plants, the pepper plants, everything like that. Just taking a pair of scissors, you'll cut right through them. My pocket knife, whatever it is, and I just slice them off right there at the ground, because all of that root system is actually full of nutrients that you want in the ground, promoting the better ecosystem for the following year for growing. Even if that root system is not fully decomposed by the time we're planting next year, the ground's going to be soft. We're going to have that stuff in the ground with it. It works out really nicely.
Yeah.
It also gives us an opportunity to start thinking about our blueprints for the following year's garden. Now, this is something that might or might not be something that's actually important. Looking at a lot of the people that are doing the back to eating gardening, they plant the same thing in the same spot every single year.
Do you
want to
let them know
what
Back to Eden is? Some people might not know what that is.
Yeah, so we started Back to Eden last year, really. Mm-hmm. I've been, I grew up, my family's always had gardens. My grandfather, my uncle especially, had big gardens and rototill every year, you know, getting the different fertilizers, compost, the different materials in, because
constant weed pulling.
It,
nonstop.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's all of their time was spent
weeds,
you know, maintaining that garden throughout the summer.
And watering.
And every night watering, which, you know, we found the Back to Eden process and kind of thought, why not give it a try? Even if it doesn't work, we'll give this a try, because weeds grow anyway. So what's the difference? So we did it last year. I watered our garden three times.
Yeah, and so Back to Eating gardening, you use
we're using
mulch.
wood chips, right? So undyed, you know, just natural. We thankfully we have our tree guy just amazing.
Thank you,
Sarah. You know, when we had seen this, and at first I thought like, this is just way too good to be true. Like, Sarah brings crazy stuff to me, and I'm just like, come on.
I do.
And then I watched some videos. I did my research on it and said, you know, this seems pretty legitimate. So she called him up and they said no problem. They dropped
thank you,
an
Ethan.
entire
We really
truckload,
we love you.
an entire truckload of wood chips in our front lawn. So much so that there's still some sitting there from last year. I could not get rid of them all. There was so many.
It's a good, we don't mind. We are very thankful.
No, absolutely. Absolutely love it. I put probably 7 or 8 inches of wood chips down.
Yeah. And they say not to expect much the first year because the whole, you basically are shocking, you know, the ecosystem where you're laying down all these wood chips, again, natural wood chips, like right from a tree. Like you're not buying stuff that's died.
And the big thing is trying to make sure that they're clean. So, you know, I was moving this stuff by wheelbarrow to the garden, and if there was a branch, which there wasn't very many or anything like that, leaves stuff, I was just pulling stuff out, just making sure it was wood chips, solid wood chips in there. Size doesn't really matter. No. You know, this is actually one of those times where, you know, if it's a larger piece of wood that got through a wood chipper, just leave it there. Let it decompose. It'll just take its time to do it. You know, and the entire theory behind this, you know, if you walk through the woods and you scrape back everything that has fallen from the trees throughout the years, you're going to find dark, moist, movable soil.
Yes, it's like what God intended. God made the forest, and it just does what it does because that's how God created it. It's the same concept. It's
and
really amazing.
It's unbelievable. One, the we didn't do any weeding this year.
We didn't pull one weed.
We, you know, if we found one, I mean, and what's weird about
maybe on
it
the
is
edges of the
you
very
could
edge.
Grab them and pull them, and they just came out as if they were like they weren't actually
floating.
Like held into it by anything. They just pulled right out. It was just crazy, and
we still got a yield because we were under the impression that it might be just a terrible gardening experience, and we went in and said, okay, if 1 year is bad, we'll supplement with like the local farmers markets,
we were fine.
I mean, not as much as we normally do, but we were fine.
Yeah, and so the ground is soft underneath of the wood chips,
it's
and
just
it holds
like black
moisture.
It's like a black, like moist. It's crazy. It's nothing that I've ever experienced, and the wood chips, they just decompose, and like everything, it just does what it's supposed to do, and there's no work involved. When you go to plant with Back to Eden Gardening, all you have to do is just separate the wood chips a little bit. You plant your seeds, and then once the vegetables start to come up enough that they're strong, then you just gently put the wood chips back, and they are fine for the entire summer.
And for us, because we're going to have the seeds started indoors, we're going to have those plants.
Yeah.
It's really just going to be make that little bit of a pathway, get them into the ground,
and
then
cover them back up.
Bring them right back in again.
It's really amazing. We really suggest that you check out the Back to Eden Gardening. We will tag you on the video that we saw that really got us into this. We'll put that video in the comments. So basically, you know, we just wanted to share our gardening methods with you to let you know now is the time to start planning your garden.
Yeah.
You know, get some seeds started. If you want to start local, you can go to your local store, your local Tractor Supplies, your local Agway, and you can get your seeds, or you can order online. Baker Creek Heirloom is a great resource for seeds.
Yeah.
I can't talk
and
about
I really
them enough.
Think that blueprinting out a garden, if you have a space, know what you can plant, how much of what you can plant, know what you can expect from a yield again,
and what you can plant next
prepare,
to each other.
Right, we have this mindset of preparedness, and this preparedness comes through everything. So we're preparing our garden early on in the year, but we're also blueprinting it, knowing what to be prepared for harvest time.
Absolutely. Harvest is your end game is the harvest. You don't want to just plant like things that you're not going to eat and things that you're not going to can and dehydrate and put up. Right. Every single thing that we're planting, there is a purpose for it. It's going to make salsa. For example, our peppers are going to make salsa.
Lots of salsa.
For the entire year. Like the entire year, we're going to do pickled jalapenos, you know, salsas, tomato sauce, tomato paste, you name it. I mean, all that stuff. We're going to dehydrate vegetables. And so it's really important just to kind of blueprint and map out what you need for your family to get that little bit closer to self-sustainability. Okay.
And we're going
to
look at getting the beans even growing higher this year so that we can get more out of the space that we have marked
off.
Yeah.
We're going to look at cattle fencing to try to do that.
We've talked about expanding our garden and taking up more of the backyard for garden.
And the outside of the garden. What can you plant on the outside of your garden that will not be a food for the deer and other local animals that are around? What is a repellent? Or is something that has resistance. So we look into all those things. Maximize and utilize your space to the best of your ability. So anything else you want to talk about? Oh, we do have something else. We have Matt Self-Reliant Sunday. What are we going to talk about today?
So early on in our podcast videos and YouTube videos, we talked about kind of stress, getting outside of our comfort zones. Mm-hmm. You know, almost that theory about stress inoculation, you know, putting stress upon yourself, doing it regularly to kind of eliminate or alleviate stress, right?
Yep.
This week for me, this past week was one of those times where the stress factor was up a little bit. I am I'm generally a person that avoids confrontation.
He is 100%.
Don't, you know, just try to find my way through the world without having to have it. And we ran into a situation where a former employee this week has been doing some stuff that I had to actually reach out to his new employer and say, you know, we gotta cool this off a little bit. And
wow.
It right away, like, I noticed my first initial reaction is not like upset almost ever. You know, I don't ever have that immediate, you know, just mad reaction. So when I felt that, I knew right away, like, okay, you know, take a step back, think about it, calm down, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately led to, you know, having to go to this person's new employer, having a face-to-face conversation, kind of could have been confrontational, and just, you know, was so nervous about what the outcome of it was going to be, whether there was even going to be any outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Went through everything, which, you know, it was okay. It wasn't anything that, it, you know, needed to have the stress level that I had, but I left that meeting just knowing, like, okay, that was stress that, you know, I would never sign up for.
Mm.
And actually was, you know, other people in my company had even said, like, so how did it go? Like, they were interested to see, not because of what they thought the outcome was going to be, but knowing that that's just not my, you know,
you're not into that.
That's not my number one thing I want to do on a daily basis. So, the stress inoculation, that avoidance of stress, right? I think it presents in ways that we don't necessarily think about. It could have been really easy for me to just say, somebody else can go and have that conversation because I'm not doing it, mm-hmm. and not had to, but instead I walked away with it, you know, with people on my own team even recognizing that, you know, it was something that was going to be challenging, and kind of stepping up to that,
you did what you had to
do. That role, you know, knowing that we're not only going to do what's right for the company here, but we're going to protect our people too, you know, and the guys that we have working for us are, you know, they're worth protecting. So it was definitely some of that inoculation distress this past week. And it just kind of, it helped me to kind of open up my eyes even a little bit more to the fact that their stresses are there. Sometimes it's not necessarily just to see how you'll handle that stress, right? It's, can you step up and actually take it and run with it when you can,
mm-hmm.
and knowing when some things are going to be too much stress or not. But, you know, for me, again, self-reliance, it very easily could have been, you know, somebody else in the company is going to handle this one because I don't like confrontation. And it would have been, nobody would have even batted an eye at that. So trust in yourself that you have the ability to kind of step up and do those things. You know, same thing with building the shelving unit, right? Like, building shelving units isn't something I'm doing on a daily basis. I don't prepare. I have everything, you know, somewhat in my head that I think that I can do, and I just start working at it. Very easily could have called, you know, carpenter friends and said, you have to come fix this, right? But we take on that role, especially as a man, you take on that role as that provider and that protector, not just with family. And, you know, this week, self-reliance wise, you know, was just really you know, chewing on some of that stress that we had and coming out the other side of it going, well, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And we're now ahead of where we should have been. So that's what I have for this week.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for sharing that. It's really, really, really proud of you. But basically, we really hope that you guys learned a lot today and you guys got some important advice. And we hope that you get your gardens prepped. It is time. Go do it now. If you have any questions, again, please drop them in the comment section. Or you can always email us. It's info@faithhomestead.com. And we'll see you later. Have a great week.
Have a great week.